This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
The Washington Post alleges that Judge Roy Moore had sexual encounters with a 14-year-old. We go over the details now on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tactics. It is great to be with each and every one of you this morning. I'm Caleb Colquitt. For those of you who may not be aware, you're listening to News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, we all know what the big news story is in the state of Alabama today. The Washington Post has come out with allegations against our Senate candidate for the Republican Party, Judge Roy Moore, saying that just about a month before Election Day actually takes place, that Judge Moore had a sexual encounter with a 14-year-old that I won't get into all the specific details. If you want a line-by-line analysis of that, you can go to the Washington Post article yourself. I've posted it on the Facebook page and on Twitter. So if you want to see that for yourself and look at the allegations for yourself, I encourage you to do that. I just don't want to get into all the specifics because, A, you can do that yourself, and, B, this is a family show, so I'm going to stay out of the specifics as much as possible. So before I get into any analysis, I think it's important to understand where we're coming from, so I will give you some of the details of the story and kind of break down in outline form exactly what's going on. First of all, the allegation is that Moore, when he was in his 30s, this particular one, the big allegation would have happened when he was 32 years old, was at this time in his early 30s when he was a district attorney in Etowah County, was chasing young women, some of which were underage at the time. Now, to be clear, and before any of this goes any further, the Post article itself, this is not my commentary. This is not me trying to take guilt off of Roy Moore or anything like this. This is what the Washington Post article that is making this allegation said, is that no allegations of actual intercourse ever took place. So even with the 14-year-old, which was the big news story, the big allegation at the center of this whole thing, even at that point, they are not saying that intercourse took place. So it is important to understand that. All but one relationship appears to be consensual. The one that was not consensual because she was under the age of consent. The age of consent in the state of Alabama is 16. She was 14. So the other three alleged relationships, although creepy and inappropriate because they would have been between the ages of 16 and 19, even though that would have been weird, it still would not have been illegal. The only one that we're talking about actual illegality would be the person that is not old enough to grant consent, which is a 14-year-old. Her name is Lee Korfman. So she's the only one that they are saying would have been an actual crime. Whether or not the allegations of the other women changes your opinion on the vote, that's something different entirely, but if we're talking about legality specifically, that's the only one that's problematic for Judge Moore. According to her, she claims that at the first meeting that he called her after originally meeting at a courthouse, and at the first meeting she claims that they kissed. On the second meeting, she claims that he touched her inappropriately. Again, that's as far as it goes. She never claims that there was intercourse taking place or anything like that. So that's what we're dealing with right now. Again, I don't want to get into too many of the details, but based on the allegations that she's lobbying, this would be sexual assault if it's true. If what he did in the article is what actually happened, then that is a case for sexual assault by Judge Moore. Now, all of this would have had to have been in his early 30s at the time, and still would have been creepy, still would have been inappropriate, and in the case of 14-year-old Lee Korfman, would have still been illegal. However, it is important to keep in mind this was before he was married. He was a single man when this was taking place. I'm not saying that that makes it better or makes it okay. I'm just saying that it is important to keep that context in mind, that it was not as though he was doing this behind his wife's back or anything like that. This is before he knew her. Or I don't know if it was before he knew her, but I do know it was before they were married and before they were seeing each other. So it is not as though he was sneaking around behind somebody's back on this. This is something that he was allegedly doing. And I say that with a big capital A on allegedly. Allegedly doing when he was single. Now, I want to go and because I don't want to be one of the guys that just rubber stamps everything, because I know Judge Moore. I like Judge Moore. You guys know that. I voted for him in the primary against Luther Strange. I did not vote for him in the original primary. I voted for Mo Brooks. But after that, I voted for Roy Moore against Luther Strange in the runoff. So I don't want to just rubber stamp, and I don't want to give cover to him. So I'm going to do the best that I can to lay out the evidence that I think makes the case stronger and the evidence that makes me suspect of the truthfulness of this story. So we're going to go through each of these line by line. First of all, evidence supporting the case. Two of Korfman, the 14-year-old, two of her friends said that she was claiming to seeing an older man at the time. Now, normally I wouldn't put much stock in this because it's friends. The reason that I do think that that adds a little bit of weight to the story is because they were saying that she was saying this at the time. In other words, she didn't tell them about this decades later. The Washington Post confirmed in an interview with them that they were saying that she was telling them this back in the late 1970s when it was actually going on. So that actually does add some weight and some credence to what was going on. Now, admittedly, they didn't say that she told them that it was Roy Moore, just an older man. But that does help corroborate the story and make her case a little stronger. Also, they were able to confirm that her mother was at the hearing in 1979 where they supposedly met, because if you're looking at the story is that her mother was going in for a divorce hearing into the court. Judge Moore happened to pass by and said, you don't want your daughter to have to go in there in the courtroom. I'll watch after until you get back, and sat down and started talking to her. And that's where he got her number and their relationship allegedly began. They obviously can't confirm whether the meeting happened or not, but they do know that this court hearing did take place, that she and her mother really were at the courthouse at the time where she could have allegedly met Judge Moore. So at least that does give credence to her story, as they were able to, through court records, confirm that that did take place. Three other women claim to have been seeing Moore when he was in his early 30s, and they were between 16 and 19. I already said this earlier. There are four cases. Three of them would have been creepy and strange, but still legal. The other one would have been illegal because she was 14 as opposed to being over the age of consent. Now, let's look at this from that level. Apparently, they did some digging, and there are four different allegations, and it doesn't appear as though they were coordinating. Maybe they were. Maybe somebody was planting, you know, bugs in their ear or whatever, or maybe they just happened to find, they interviewed a lot of women and just happened to find four that were willing to say that they were approached by Moore. Either way, this does add some weight to it because it's three other women saying essentially the same thing. It's not as though Korfman is the only claimant here. So that does add some weight to her story. And also, she claims, Korfman does, that she has voted for Republicans in the past three presidential elections, including Trump. Now, this is one of her word against everybody else's, because obviously they don't keep records on how you voted. But the claimant is saying that she didn't actually, this isn't politically motivated. She doesn't hate Republicans, and she's not, standing against Roy Moore because of his politics or anything like that. According to her, this is legitimate. She just does not want him to get office, considering what kind of man she believes him to be. And so she's saying that it's not because I'm a Democrat, it's not because I'm a donor, or I'm working for Doug Jones or anything like that. I am a Republican. I have voted for Republicans. I voted for Trump. So, again, we don't know if that's true or not, but that is the claim that she's making, which does also add some weight. It's not as though we're going to find out later that she was secretly paid off by Doug Jones' campaign or something like that. I mean, I guess technically that could still happen, but right now none of that evidence exists. She is claiming that she is a Republican voter. So those are the four big things that I would say are evidence supporting her case, that she had friends that backed up her story at the time, that they were able to confirm that the court hearing in her story actually did happen, that three other women have claimed to be seeing Moore when that was taking place around the same era in his life, and also that she claims that she has voted for Republicans and voted for Republicans in this most recent election. So those are the four things that are really helping grant weight to her case. When we come back, we'll talk about the evidence that makes me a little skeptical of whether or not she's telling the truth. That when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Bible is the best of all books, for it is the Word of God and teaches us the way to be happy in this world and in the next. Continue, therefore, to read it and to regulate your life by its precepts. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. At Tactics Radio is the Twitter handle if you want to weigh in that way. Certainly would like to hear some of your thoughts on this. If you're a Roy Moore voter, what do you think about this? Is this going to change your mind about it? That kind of thing. So we just gave you before the break the evidence supporting the case, supporting that the details that were brought out in the Washington Post are indeed true. Now it's time to give you some of the evidence that is against it. First of all, I would say true or not, even if this turns out to be true, the timing is suspect. I think that the timing is no mistake, even if the details happen to be accurate, which, again, we'll look into that and see whether or not that's the case. But even if it does happen to be true, I would be willing to bet that the Washington Post has had this information and had it for a while now and has been sitting on it until, about a month before the election. Would not surprise me at all to find out that that was going on. We'll probably never know about that particular detail, but even if all this happens to be accurate, they probably sat on the story to where it would do the maximum amount of damage to the Roy Moore campaign and waited until almost exactly a month before Election Day to make sure that it has enough time. And here's the thing. It was timed perfectly because we only have a month. So whether or not this happens to be accurate or not, that completely determines whether or not people will, you know, some people that may base their vote on this, there's no time to shake it out. There's no time to determine whether or not these stories are true or not. And that's the big problem that I have with it. If this had happened maybe 2 or 3 months ago, we would probably have time to vet the story, to see whether or not it's true, to look into some of the background of it, to find out more details about it. With only a month to go, there's very little chance that we'll be able to either prove or disprove this story before the election actually takes place. And that is something that is of great concern to me. So the timing in and of itself is very suspect. It makes me question whether or not this story is true or not. Korfman also is the only one to claim sexual contact beyond kissing. So why is she the sole exception? Now, I'm not saying that these other three women are credible either. I'm just saying that one thing that does make me raise my eyebrow on this is, of all these stories, according to what's going on here, she's the only one that happens to be a minor that wouldn't have been to the age of consent, and she's the only claimant that is saying that their relationship went any further than just kissing. So isn't it convenient that the only one that it would have actually been illegal for him to go past that point is the one that they're claiming he went past that point with? So why is it that she happens to be the sole outlier, and why is she the only one claiming this and the other women are not claiming that this happened? Does that absolutely blow a massive hole in the story? I don't know that it really does, but the point is, it is suspicious. And it does seem odd that she would be the one outlier, especially considering she's the only one that it would be actually illegal for her to be the outlier on. Also, claims have been told to people decades after the fact. For example, I told you earlier that part of the thing corroborating her story was that she was essentially letting people know that she was seeing an older man, but didn't say that it was Roy Moore. She didn't tell people that it was Roy Moore until decades later. That doesn't mean her story is absolutely false, but again, it raises some suspicion and weakens her claim. And also, there was an explanation of the delay in speaking up. She says that the reason she hasn't spoken up before now or in any of his previous elections is because of credibility issues, that she's been divorced 3 times, that she's had financial trouble, and that people would be worrying that she's just out for the money, which, if that's the case, that hasn't changed. I mean, I assume that based on the way this reads, she's still having financial troubles and she's still been divorced 3 times. So if credibility was the big thing holding her back, why did that change all of a sudden right now? Why is today the day that she decided that, regardless of my credibility issues, I'm going to come out about it now? Again, it doesn't completely disprove her story or mean that there's absolutely no truth to it. But what it does say is her explanation for why she's coming out with this now really doesn't make any sense. The reason that she hasn't come forward with it before doesn't make any sense. Sometimes things don't make sense, and that doesn't make them untrue. But in this case, it does seem like if that were the logic behind her making that decision, that should have remained constant and hasn't. So I'm not really sure based on this. It does say that the Washington Post pursued these women for comment, so maybe it was that a reporter showed up at her door, and that's why she decided to go ahead and let these details out. But either way, it does seem strange. So here's the important part of all this. How do you react if it turns out that this is true? Because I think it's always important to make that decision of how you plan to react on what you're going to do and what you decide is going to be the way things are before, how you're going to react to it before you determine whether or not it's actually true or not. Because otherwise it can taint your ability to decide whether or not it's true. So in this particular case, you have to decide, is this going to change your vote? Am I going to continue to vote for Roy Moore if we find out this is true? Well, I said that for Moore to lose, it was going to take some kind of external force. I think Washington Post knows that. I think the average person knows that Roy Moore is popular enough, that he's winning by enough, that if he were to lose, it would take something external like this, and that's part of the reason that I find it suspect. Also, we have to be careful not to play the lesser of two evils game. If it turns out that Roy Moore is doing this personally, that he has done this, personally, I will not vote for him. But here's the thing, I'm not going to vote for Doug Jones either. Even if it turns out that these details are accurate, that doesn't make Doug Jones all of a sudden pro-life. That doesn't make him good on economics. That doesn't mean he won't support Obamacare. So if I were to find this out, I wouldn't vote for Roy Moore, but I also wouldn't vote for Doug Jones. But here's the problem. Right now, all this is an allegation. And so until there is further investigation into this to find out if it's true, I'm going to follow due process, which means I'm going to treat Moore as though he is innocent until I can find proof that he is guilty. That's how I plan on treating it. That's how I think the average person should be treating it. Because right now, all this is an allegation. Take it, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
A watchful eye must be kept on ourselves, lest, while we're building ideal monuments of renown and bliss here, we neglect to have our names enrolled in the annals of heaven. James Madison.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can also tweet us at Tactics Radio if you want to do that. Now, we have a guest that is calling in from the road right now. It's somebody that you know, somebody that actually has a connection to Roy Moore, and that's one of the reasons that she's on. She's here to talk about the allegations. You may remember my former co-host, Laura Glidewell, back when I was the Patriot Preacher on Saturday mornings. This is somebody that I know, somebody that I trust with my life. And so, you know, this is somebody that I figured that y'all would know as well, because you remember back when she was on the show with me. So good morning, Laura. Good to hear from you.
Good morning, Caleb. It's good as always to hear from you. I don't know if you should trust me with your life, though.
Well, there may be some legitimacy to that, but nonetheless, it is, it's good to hear from you this morning. Thank you for being generous with your time. I know that you're on the road. You've got a lot to do this weekend, but if you could just go ahead and give the audience, because I already know this, obviously, but just for the audience to give them some kind of context, could you describe how you know Judge Moore, your relationship with him, that kind of thing, before we get into any of the details and talking about the allegations?
Certainly. Well, I started in January of this year as an intern at the Foundation for Moral Law. You'll remember that from several news stories talking about that foundation. And I ended my internship there in July. Judge Moore does not, at this time or any time during my internship, work for the Foundation for Moral Law. He did not get on any cases, anything like that. But his office is in the foundation, and he would occasionally come in there and work. And, of course, you know, his wife is the president thereof, and he would see his wife. So there were several occasions in which I was around Judge Moore, and I would see him around the office. I would talk to him. There were times in which I'd go into his office to talk about things, you know, legal theories and what have you. He's always fascinating because he's just a brilliant legal mind. And so I would really enjoy to go in there and just ask him questions and, you know, try to talk through really fascinating legal theories.
Right.
In that capacity, I had a very, very open relationship around him, a very, anyway, I consider him a good friend. So I do know him pretty well, and he's just a sweet guy. I mean, absolutely fun to be around. He will joke around and play around, but he's also very serious and very deep thinking. And in the times that he did joke around and play around, he was always excessively professional, very respectful, you know, never showed anything that would have come off as, you know, disrespectful or, you know, sexual misconduct. I don't know. I can't believe these allegations are even happening.
So when you say joke around, and you know that this is just how guys are, we've heard, especially in the wake of the recent presidential campaign, that, you know, some guys engage in locker room talking. Were you ever around Judge Moore when something like that happened, where he would comment on a woman or how attractive he thought she was or make some kind of crude joke, anything like that?
Goodness, no. Nor would I believe he would actually do that, not even in private. I mean, And you got to understand, you know, when he's around the office, he's amongst friends. So he would absolutely talk
right. It's a casual environment. I mean, it's a work environment, but he's around people he knows.
Yeah, it's very casual. And so, no, he would never crack a joke like that. He would never make a crude comment. And certainly I've never heard him comment on how attractive or unattractive a woman is.
Huh. Well, as an attractive young woman yourself, I mean.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes, well, you know. As an attractive young lady yourself, did Moore ever give off a vibe that he might be pursuing you, or that he might be interested in you, or maybe some of the other women that work in the office with you? Did you ever get any sense of that at all?
No, not at all. In fact, there were two women during that time that worked in that office, myself and Jesse Deem, who was the secretary.
Right,
and
I've had lunch with Jesse.
Yeah, you've met her. Neither of us have ever gotten that impression from him. He's never tried to pursue either of us. I mean, he's only ever treated us with respect.
Okay.
And if most of you know, I met my boyfriend while working in that office. And when we started dating and Judge Moore found out about it, he urged Matt to treat me well. So he's only even told people to treat women with respect.
All right. Interesting. I did want to ask a couple other things about this. Korfman, the 14-year-old that's making this allegation, the big one at the center of this Washington Post story, she has been interviewed with this particular story, and the Washington Post says that she told this story consistently 6 different times. And, you know, that does add a little bit of credibility to it. So if she happens to be lying, she's either telling the truth or she's lying, and she's incredibly adept at it. So doesn't that add some weight to the story, some credibility to her making these allegations?
Well, this is my concern, is what you said is that the Washington Post, right, is the one that's saying
yes.
that she told it consistently six times?
Right.
I'd like to see those six times.
I don't know if they have actual records of those interviews or if, I mean, here's the thing. As someone who's a former journalist for a newspaper myself, what I would have done is have them recorded, like have actual audio recordings of them so I could go back in my notes. And I would love to see them release the audio recordings of those if those do happen to exist. And I would imagine, especially nowadays where everybody has a recording device in their pocket, that especially a journalist would have recorded these interviews. It would be interesting to me to see how consistent it was if they would go ahead and release those.
Well, yeah. Well, and the timestamp, too. I mean, is she telling this story consistently six times the same way within the same week? Has she been saying this for years?
See,
why now after several elections?
I don't know how long it's taking, but the time frame that the Washington Post gives is that it's been about 3 or 4 weeks that they've been working on this story. I don't know how accurate that is because they're self-reporting, but according to them, that they sought out these women over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks after one of their reporters here in Alabama overheard that there might be something to these allegations. And so if I had to guess, and again, this is a guess, and Washington Post is free to come out and correct me on this if I happen to be wrong.
The words come at me, bro.
Right. These six interviews probably took place over the course of 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. Well, and this is what I find disturbing. Even though you're seeing several news sites reporting it, their source consistently is the Washington Post.
Well, that's where it originated. Yeah.
Exactly. But they're not hearing it from these women. So we have one, really, if their one source is Washington Post, that means we only really have one news source that's reporting this. And that one news source has absolutely come right out and endorsed Doug Jones as the candidate.
Right.
So, you know, take it for what it's worth. This is not me saying don't go vote for Doug Jones. Now, this is me saying don't go vote for Doug Jones. But it does lend some question as to how reliable the Washington Post actually is.
Well, now, here's another thing that I was going to ask about, because I do think this adds some weight to her story as well. She had two separate friends that confirmed that she was telling them that she had been seeing an older man, and that she said this back in 1979 when it would have been taking place. So it wasn't like decades later. And then her mother said that she told her, you know, 10, 15 years ago. No, actually, I take that back. It would have been about 17 years ago, because it would have been right around 2000 when he was running, that Roy Moore had done this. So isn't her bringing up this story a long time ago, doesn't that add some credibility to it as well?
I mean, if it were, okay, so thinking about this not as Roy Moore's friend, but as a, you know, a law student training to be an attorney, trying to be about as objective as I could possibly be.
Right.
If that's true, it would tend to lead some credibility. However, the thing you've got to remember with that kind of thing, and I'm trying not to use legal terms here, and it's not the same, but that really is hearsay. And so, I mean, you're kind of, it leaves you wondering, like, did that really happen in that time frame? And I hate to be so distrusting, but goodness, that's the world we live in. And I probably would be more inclined as an objective person to lend credibility if it weren't for the fact that every Republican male politician out there is being accused of something like this. I mean, it's just the scandal that they want to bring out on everybody.
Right. Well, here's the thing, and this is one thing that I wanted to bring up and ask you about and press you on just a little bit before we go to a break. And can I hold you over for another break?
Yeah, I got nothing better to do. I'm driving.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being so generous with your time then. All right.
Oh,
well,
I am.
Well, I tell you what, we'll go ahead and we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back, and then I'll ask that question if that's all right.
Well, I'll be waiting on pens and needles.
All right. Well, thank you, Laura. I appreciate that. That's Laura Glidewell. She was an intern at the Foundation for Moral Law, knows Judge Moore, worked in the same office space that he did. And so we are glad to have her on, glad that she's back. Y'all may remember she's my former co-host. So we will have her back on with this question when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5:1, "It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery."
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. You can tweet us at Tactics Radio if you want to. And just like I promised, Laura Glidewell is on with us. She was with the Foundation for Moral Law, knows Judge Moore, has known him for a while now, worked in the same office with him. Welcome back, Laura.
Hello.
So I did want to ask you about this, because you gave what I thought was a very compelling case for Judge Moore being an upstanding person, somebody that would never engage in something like this, earlier in the interview that we gave right before the break, talking about his character, talking about that he's never made a pass at you or any of the other women that you've seen him around. Here's my question, though. Is it not possible that he has changed over the years, that maybe back in his early 30s, like this story is saying, when this happened, that he was engaged in stuff like this, and later on he repented and changed his life, and this is something that happened in the past?
Well, Caleb, now comes for a part which you're very familiar with coming from me.
Uh-huh.
But I will now tell you something about women. See, women have a sixth sense about men. We know when a guy is creepy. We just do. And you could have been a creep like 40 years ago, and we're going to have known about it, because once you've been that way, we can feel that vibe. We know. And, like, you know, that's something that doesn't change amongst men. Let's just have an honest talk here about men. Men are very visually inclined. So if you're going to be a creepy guy and you're looking at how women look, we're going to know about it. We notice. And we may act like we don't notice, but we notice. So, yeah, okay, if he were that way many years ago and changed, there would be some residual stuff that any woman could actually pick up on. And I can tell you that I never picked up on that. Never. And I'm very good at picking up on that kind of thing.
Okay. So, I mean, there are four women alleging this. Don't you think that it's odd that even though they were independently interviewed by the Washington Post, that four different women are essentially giving this narrative that he had pursued them even though that they were younger?
I certainly think there's a lot of things that's odd about it, but I don't think any of it is Judge Moore's conduct. I think what's odd is, you know, what's coming out now. Why is it coming out now? What exactly is actually going on? Because, like I said, this is a widespread scandal throughout the Republicans because Democrats are fabricating it, even though, by the way, Bill Clinton. But, I mean, that's obviously not the point.
Well, you know,
that's kind of what I'm seeing is actually odd.
You know, Laura, I'm hesitant to even make that comparison because I totally understand the reason you could make it, because there is a allegation of sexual misconduct. But the reason I'm hesitant to even bring up, like, a Bill Clinton, a Donald Trump, or anything like that is because, A, when it came to, for example, Trump, we had actual audio of him saying things like that. And he was kind of always known as a womanizer long before he ever ran for political office.
And I'm not making a comparison.
No, I know. And that, I'm just saying this for the audience's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And B, this is another big thing. The allegations are different. They're not suggesting mm-hmm. rape happened. They're not suggesting, in the Roy Moore case, they're not suggesting that, at least for three out of four of these women, that it was non-consensual, that he was, you know, using a position of power or authority over them or anything like that. So these are very, very, very different cases, as you know, as a, you know, an aspiring attorney, that it's almost not even really worth comparing them ballpark wise when it comes to this. But anyway, you still there? Laura? I think we may have lost her. Laura, you still there? Going once, going twice. Yeah, sorry about that. I believe we have technical difficulties. Laura told me that she was on the road. She's on the way to Tennessee, that her phone might have dropped out. So I'm assuming that's what happened. But nonetheless, oh, wait, I'm pretty sure that's her. Let's go ahead and get her back on. Laura, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, I hit Georgia.
Yeah,
pretty
well,
right into.
That would knock out your reception, I guess, running into a whole state.
I did.
But anyway, so what I was trying to say there is, before you dropped out, that it's not really even a fair comparison, because there's no allegations of rape. There's only, out of the four relationships, only one is even alleged to not be consensual. There was no intercourse that took place at any time. So, I mean, it's almost not even worthy to compare to, like, a Bill Clinton, a Donald Trump, a Roger Ailes, Harvey Weinstein, all those guys. It's almost not even worthy to compare these two in the ballpark together.
Yeah, and I think you make an excellent point there. Like, comparatively, it's pretty small, even the allegations. But, I mean, just coming at it from a standpoint of, he's my friend, I absolutely hate to hear even that. I don't think it's true. Now, you did ask a good question about, you know, the fact that these were younger women.
Right.
You got to realize, I'm a younger woman. You know, people in the audience, I'm 24. I was 24.
Right, you're younger than me.
Yeah, so, yeah. And like, some of you saying he didn't pursue me, that says something. But I will tell you this. Kayla, his wife, is 15 years younger than him. Now, they were dating and they got married when she was in the age of majority. So she was an adult during all that.
He would have been, in his mid-30s, maybe late-30s when they got married?
Yeah, late-30s.
Okay.
So yeah. So if you have a thing for younger women, yeah, goodness. But, you know, does that really make him a rapist or, you know, sexual misconduct? No. So there is nothing in these reports that are saying that a lot of these weren't consensual. That is entirely possible.
Yeah, and the Washington Post article itself, if you actually go in and read it, it makes that claim itself. It says, you know, basically, to be clear, these other relationships would have been consensual because they were over the age of consent in Alabama.
Exactly. Really and truly, like, you're not looking at anything that's illegal, or, you know, we can argue the morality of it, but, I mean, you're not looking at anything really illegal here.
Yeah, so here's and this will be one of my last big questions, because I do think that this is important to ask. What motive do you think the woman would have for making this up? Like, especially as someone that has claimed that she's a Republican, that she's voted for Trump, what do you think her motivation could possibly be for lying about this, if indeed she is lying? Because that's an important question to ask, too.
Here's some fun snooping for you. She actually commented on a post by Doug Jones and said she was a Democrat. So I don't know where the Washington Post, or why the Washington, okay, actually, I can tell you why the Washington Post probably said she was Republican. But to my knowledge, she's actually a Democrat. And my guess would be that people, and let's just be perfectly honest here, a lot of people don't like Roy Moore because he is not going to sit down and take it. He is going to stand up for what he believes. He's going to stand up for what most of Alabama believes. And he's not going to lie down, not even to the Republican Party. And they don't like it.
Ruffle a lot of feathers in the Republican. They've already had Shelby Ann McConnell saying that he should step down because of this. I mean, it took all of 5 seconds.
A long time ago.
I was about to say, it took them all of 5 seconds to say, well, yeah, we don't really want you in the Senate.
Oh, they didn't want him a long time before this. I mean, so, yeah, there's a lot of motive here for somebody to come out, especially with, like, who knows what the Washington Post did to try to track this woman down. You know, like, hey, let's find somebody in his path who we can maybe get out to say, oh, he treated me unfairly sexually, you know, or there was sexual misconduct. And,
well, the Washington Post,
he's not the wonder.
The Washington Post, there is no doubt in my mind that they want a story like this, that they were actively pursuing it. They don't like Republicans. Their opinion page has always been decidedly far left. And so I don't question their motive for putting out a story like this, because I know their motive. I was just asking about the woman specifically.
Brilliant. You've got to wonder what the Washington Post offered her. You've got to wonder, you know, what her, and you're right, her motives may have entirely been, I don't want him in the Senate, you know.
Could have been.
Who knows? But, who knows? And it's entirely possible that she and Judge Moore may have never actually met. That's likely also, you know. It could be that Judge Moore has no idea who this person is.
Well, that's possible. Now, they did confirm that she was at that hearing that she claims they met at, and his office was down the hall. But it's basically just going on her word that she met Judge Moore that day. But,
yeah,
all right,
yeah.
I got to go to a break. Thank you so much, Laura.
No problem.
All right, we'll be back. Hour two.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
USA Today releases an educational video about the Texas church shooters, AR-15. Some things may not be all that accurate, though. We go there now on Tactics. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Hour 2 of Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. At Tactics Radio is the Twitter handle. If y'all want to call in, weigh in, let me know what's on your mind since it is First Amendment Friday. If you want to talk about some of the things we talked about in the first hour, I'll be happy to take some calls on that, on the situation with Roy Moore. Don't usually do that once I've changed subjects, but I will do that in the following segments if you really want to. I did want to shift gears here, though. USA Today puts out this educational video about the Texas gunman's AR-15. Now, right out of the gate, there are two very big red flags that let you know this is not going to be a fair assessment of guns and that this is really all about pushing gun control. First of all, the way they title it, they say the Texas church gunman's AR-15. Why is that a red flag? Because you notice they don't mention that the guy who stopped the Texas church massacre was also using an AR-15. They didn't do an educational video about his AR-15. They didn't talk about its capabilities. They want to frame this in such a way that only the bad guy had an AR-15. You see, that was the interesting thing to me. That was the first big red flag that let me know this is just going to be something that's promoting gun control. And so what they do is they label it the Texas gunman's AR-15 and start talking about a lot of the aftermarket attachments. They show a picture that was posted on the gunman's Facebook page and say, this is presumably, first of all, it's only presumably the rifle that he used in the attack. We don't know for sure if it's the same gun that he put on Facebook that was also the one that he used, because apparently he had several guns, and we don't know if it's the same one that he used. We know that he was using an AR-15 in the attack. We don't know if it was the same AR-15. But nonetheless, they talk about a lot of aftermarket attachments that you can make. And this is basically what the little two and a half minute video revolves around. And the second big red flag is this quote: AR-15 style rifles may have many aftermarket options, some common, some rare. So they do at least admit that some of the aftermarket options, in other words, the attachments that you put onto your firearm after you've purchased it, it doesn't come that way off the shelf. They admit that some of these are common, some of them are not so common. Well, the interesting thing is, for the remainder of the video, they never differentiate between which ones are common and which ones are not. So basically, they just throw them all, lump them all into big one heap there. They will acknowledge that some are more common than others at the beginning of the film, but they make absolutely no effort whatsoever to distinguish between those two as the video wears on, which really shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Some of them are really common. Some of the common ones that they put out are like the red dot sight, the flashlight, which, by the way, both of these things that they're trying to use to scare you actually makes guns safer, because obviously if you have a sight that allows you to put your target on, you're only shooting that which you want to shoot. That actually aids in making sure that the gun is used safely and only shoots that which you're supposed to be shooting. Same thing with the flashlight. Well, the flashlight could theoretically help prevent you from shooting somebody you don't want to shoot, or somebody who is not attacking you, if you have the flashlight so you can see where you're aiming. So there's a couple of things here that are actually gun safety features that are aftermarket options that actually help make your firearm safer for you and for people around you. They also use a couple of the other ones, a telescopic stock, which, again, telescopic stock really doesn't do anything. It just makes the gun more comfortable for you. It gives you an option of how far back to set your gun on your shoulder when you're firing it. A foregrip, which is really just a handle. That's all it is. It's just a handle that you put underneath your gun so that you can hold it a little bit more comfortably. So a lot of these things have nothing to do with the actual functionality of the gun itself. They're just either aesthetic or they aid in some way to make the firearm more comfortable to use. And that's what most of these that they talk about are. There's a couple, though, that they mentioned that are a little bit off the wall, and these are the ones that they would talk about that would be qualified as quote-unquote rare. And when I say rare, I mean incredibly rare. One of the attachments that they talked about was a underbarrel shotgun. So in this graphic, they have an AR-15, and they add a shotgun underneath the actual AR-15 so that it's a combination between a rifle and a shotgun at the same time. But here's the thing. I did a little research in this because as somebody who does like guns and has studied them and actually wants to own an AR-15 or something similar to it at one point, right now I do have a couple of rifles, but they're not quite AR-15. So I was thinking about purchasing an AR-15 at some point. But anyway, as someone who's researched this, I was like, really, an underbarrel shotgun? Because I've never seen that attachment offered. And I looked at it. Not only can you not find an AR-15 on the market that has this straight off the shelf, you can't even find an attachment for it. You can add a shotgun to the bottom of your AR-15, but it has to be a custom job. Because there is no attachment that you can buy from a gun store to just attach a shotgun to the bottom of your AR-15. That doesn't exist. You can theoretically take a existing shotgun and modify it and attach it to the bottom of your gun, but that takes a level of skill that most people do not have, and it is very difficult to pull off. In fact, I was watching some YouTube videos of some guys that did this. They're all custom modifications, and each one of them said that it took them a lot of work to be able to make it functional. And even then, it's horribly impractical. Because it completely throws off where you would hold the gun normally. It can throw off your aim. So the idea that this is something that the average AR-15 owner might consider purchasing is frankly stupid. I mean, yes, theoretically you can attach this, but it's not just rare, it's the rarest of the rare. I mean, this isn't like, if you were to make the analogy of a car, this isn't like going to Best Buy and buying a new radio for your car and installing it yourself. This would be like you would have to invent a new radio to go into your car, or something that, actually it wouldn't even be a radio, it would be something that normally doesn't even go onto a car. Like, this is like having a waffle iron in your car. I mean, that's how rare it is. That you'd have to come up with some kind of custom rig specifically just to attach this to your AR-15. And this one is my personal favorite. You just have to laugh at this one. One of the ones that they bring up in their video is the chainsaw bayonet. I'm not making this up. I posted the video. You could look at it yourself if you want to. They actually took a graphic of a chainsaw and attached it to the bottom of an AR-15. I've never heard of this before. I couldn't find any pictures or anything of someone that had actually done this. And here's the other thing. The only person I can think of that would actually want some kind of chainsaw feature on their AR-15, I guess, is a hunter who's also a lumberjack. This is for your gun enthusiast lumberjack family member. That's a great gift to get for the holidays, is the chainsaw bayonet attachment for the AR-15. Now, the problem with that is, of course, commercially, you can't buy it. It doesn't exist. You can't go to, you know, Bass Pro or Cabela's or anything and get a actual chainsaw bayonet. So I was wondering where they even got this idea or where this is coming from. And I remembered, and this is where me being a huge gaming nerd actually comes into handy when doing political commentary. This thing does exist in Gears of War, the video game. It's not as though this thing is actually functional or that there's a real chainsaw that works as a bayonet on a rifle. They took this out of a fantasy video game, which shows you how very little USA Today actually knows about firearms and what attachments can go on to them. The point is they're trying to scare you. They're trying to make the gun look as scary as humanly possible so people can freak out and say, what? Chainsaw bayonets are illegal? Well, they're not illegal because no one ever thought to put one on them because it's a fantasy weapon. For example, I have a gunblade. Now, a gunblade is a weapon from Final Fantasy VIII, another video game, to where when you pull the trigger, because the handle looks like a gun, it looks like a revolver, to where you pull the trigger, it creates a ricochet effect through the sword, and so when you slash, it kind of tears through as opposed to just slicing through whatever it is that you're cutting. The problem is it doesn't work because it's a fantasy weapon. It's a costume piece. You can't actually use it to fight because, for one, it's way too heavy and off balance. And as somebody who actually does sword fight, I can attest to that. It's just costume. It's just a costume prop. And that's exactly what this thing is. But USA Today is running with this as though there are real AR-15 owners that have chainsaw bayonets attached to the front of their guns. But even if that were the case, even if you could theoretically attach this to the front of your gun, first of all, how on earth are you going to use the gun after that? Because now you're trying to avoid grabbing on an active chainsaw while you're firing your rifle. And second of all, why would you want the thing anyway? You have a gun. There's no reason to get close enough to somebody to hack them apart with a chainsaw when you have a rifle on you. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, for practical purposes, they might as well have shown a graphic of them attaching a lightsaber to the front of this AR-15. They're living in a fantasy world. And so the end result of all this is this video was compiled to scare stupid people. They put this together to scare people that don't know anything about guns, to invoke outrage in them because they don't know any better and they think that how can these things possibly be legal? Well, because they're not real. People don't really do these things. And even if they did, it makes their gun basically non-functioning. It would actually make the weapon less deadly because of how horribly impractical it is. So this is just done to scare stupid people. This is one more example of how the left hates guns despite not knowing anything about guns. They are unable to distinguish between fantasy and reality at this point. Now, I want to tell you about something that is real. What's real is the great customer service that you're getting down at Jim Woodham's Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. These guys, they know customer service, they know their customers. That's why they've been in business here in the River Region for 50 years now, is because they do a great job, they know their customers, they know their needs, and they're able to deliver on that and to do it at a great price. I got to tell you, I've bought tires from a lot of different places, never had quite the experience that I have with Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They were able to get them on quickly. They gave them to me at a great price, and that is something that is of great concern to me as a truck owner because, of course, truck tires are more expensive than regular tires. But whatever your needs are, whether you need engine repair, maybe you need to get that heater fixed because, let's face it, it was a little chilly this morning. If your heater's not working, might be a good time to take it down to Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. You can see them on the Troy Highway and get them to look at that today. Go where I go to get my truck fixed. That's Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Also, talking about things in the news that are fake, apparently there was a hoax that was perpetrated. It was a hate crime, but it wasn't the Nazi skinheads that they originally thought were perpetrating this hate crime. In fact, the person who was responsible may surprise you. We go there in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. At Tactics Radio is the Twitter handle if y'all want to let me know what is on your mind. It is Friday. I'm excited. The South's oldest rivalry will be taking place tomorrow, Georgia versus Auburn, and I am thrilled about that. Hopefully, taking on number one, that is going to be scary. It's going to be tough, but I am very hopeful that my Tigers can pull something out. If we do, this may be the start of something really great. So their destiny is definitely in their own hands, and I'm pumped about it. But I do want to talk about something that was going on the other day. This was relayed by the Washington Post. About a month and a half ago, you may remember this news story. I don't think we actually covered it on the show. If I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong about this, but and I always do this, I kind of over-prepare. I had this story on my notes, but I never actually got to it. We got into something else, had a bunch of callers, and we just never got to this story. But anyway, so I believe I was intending on covering this story, but I never did. But this happened about a month and a half ago, where five black cadets found a racial slurs on their doors message boards at an Air Force prep school. Y'all may remember this because there was a lot of buzz about it on the internet. I never actually covered the original story, but a new development has come out to where they found the person responsible. Now, these messages were vile. One of them said, "Go home," N-word. The school launched an investigation, and Lieutenant Jay Silveria addressed the school. His speech, which was phenomenal, by the way, his speech actually went viral to the crowd. One of the big lines in it, his big finisher was, "If you can't treat someone with dignity and respect, then get out." I really liked the speech. I saw it online. I talked to some of my friends about it, some of my buddies at church. It was actually a brother at church who happens to be black that shared it with me. And I really, you know, couldn't believe that this had happened. He and I talked about it for a little while. And I got to tell you, I love the speech. I love the, you know, the response to it, which I thought was absolutely appropriate. However, an interesting new development has come when they found out who it was. Turns out that the cadet that was writing these messages was black. So this whole thing was a hoax. It wasn't a Nazi sympathizer. It wasn't an alt-right guy. I'm not making excuses for those guys, but at this particular point, that wasn't who did it. So it wasn't like a white supremacist or someone. It was a black student that was making this whole thing up, which really surprised me. But this is the third incident of fake hate crimes in the past few weeks. There was a deal at K-State where they had racist slurs written all over somebody's car, graffitied over somebody's car. Turns out it was the owner of the car himself that did that, which I was always suspicious of it because it was done in washable paint, which typically if you're going to graffiti somebody's car, you use spray paint, you don't use washable paint. But this guy graffitied his own car with racial slurs at Kansas State. And apparently that was a hoax as well. There was also the hoax at East Michigan University, where another fake hate crime. You can remember a couple months ago we had, this has been several months ago now, the poop swastika. I know it doesn't even sound like a real news story, but it actually did happen. And the noose that was hung outside a student's dorm room, both of those we found out were hoaxes, that it was perpetrated by people that actually they would have been, quote unquote, the victims of that. So when we're looking at this, it appears as though these are on the rise, that these are happening with more and more frequencies. And this bothers me because it really hurts minorities. And that's the person that it gets to the most. The reason that I say that is the very people that would be victims of these had they been real. Now, all of a sudden, this takes away from people believing when they actually happen. So now people are going to be naturally skeptical of these stories when they really do take place. If somebody actually does paint a swastika, for example, outside of a black dorm at a college, now everybody's all of a sudden going to be thinking, now is this one real or was it a bunch of black students that just wanted victim status? So actually, if you're against racism, this is one of the worst things that you can do, because it undermines real cases of racism when they actually do happen. And they do happen. Stuff like this does happen for real sometimes. But doing stuff like this gives you the boy who cried wolf effect. Furthermore, and this is another thing that gets under my skin about it, we have a growing number of people, because I think the reason that these are happening is that we have a growing number of people who just want victim status. It is seen as almost something to be coveted, to be the victim of a hate crime. because it gives you, I don't know, some kind of credibility when talking about racism, or it furthers the racism narrative. And so because of that, they're perpetrating these hoaxes. Why would someone want to be a victim? This is a mentality that I don't understand, so I've been trying to wrap my head around it. The only thing that I could come up with is, I guess if you're a victim, it gives you an excuse for other things in your life. So if you can invoke some kind of victim status, it gives you an excuse to, I don't know, not be necessarily successful or things like that. And I was thinking about this with an actual friend of mine who I worked with at the hotel once. And I won't say his name because I don't want to embarrass him. But this guy, he and I were buddies. We talked comics. He's a likable guy. But one thing that did bother me is anything bad that ever happened at work, it was always because he was black. And I remember he and I actually, even though we were friends, got into an argument about this one time because he was upset that he wasn't promoted to head chef because he was black. And I said, look, man, I don't like our boss either. And this was one of the worst bosses I've ever had. But I said, I don't like our boss either, but she's made 3 hires since she's been here. All of them have been black. So I don't think that, and I said, and it's not because some white people didn't apply. So I don't think you can blame her. You can't call her a racist and say the reason you didn't get the job is because you're black. Now, you can make some other excuses or things like, but everything isn't about racism. And every little thing that ever happened, it was because of race with him. And unfortunately, I think that's a growing sentiment. I'm not saying that there's never incidents of racism. I'm not saying nobody in this country nowadays, I'm not saying that it never happens, that someone doesn't get the job because of their race, something like that. But what I am saying is when you make absolutely everything about race and you invoke this victim status, I think there are some people that do that because they feel as though as long as they're victims, they have an excuse for things not going right in their life other than their own performance and their own merit. And I hate to say that, but unfortunately, I think that there are at least some people in this country, and I believe that this is an example of that, this particular news story, of someone doing that. But here's, just to add a little perspective, I'm glad that we live in a country where most people today have to invent imaginary hatred. Because used to, you didn't have to invent hatred, it was just there. And so when it came to incidents of racism or things, you didn't have to invent those stories because they already existed. You were going to run into them whether you wanted to or not. And now we live in a country that, for the most part, race doesn't matter to people. You have equal opportunity. And because of that, people feel as though they have to invent these stories of racism just so they have some kind of connection to previous generations. And so they have an excuse for some of the things going on in their own lives. We have to invent incidents of imaginary hatred for this to take place. Because the simple truth is that nowadays in America, the vast majority of us have no issue with one another. And that's why those who are pushing the narrative of America being a racist country have to invent and make up stories and incidents like this. I think that's a good thing. I think that that shows that we've come a really long way in this country. I know there's some people that won't agree with that, but why else would you have to invent an incident of racism happening against you? I think that that's pretty profound. We'll be back in a minute.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Righteousness alone can exalt a nation. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And the News Radio 1440 app, 860-1440 are the numbers, at Tactics Radio is the Twitter handle. It is Friday. I wanted to do something a little more fun, a little more lighthearted. I saw Thor Ragnarok last week. So if you're looking for something to do this weekend, something to, you know, whether or not you want to go to the movies, maybe thinking about something to do with the wife or the kids, highly, highly recommend this movie. I thought it was really good. I think it's actually one of the better Marvel films, and that's saying quite a bit. Because Marvel has been really killing it lately. They do a really good job, and I think Thor Ragnarok might be one of the better ones. It's if I were to describe kind of the way that the movie unfurls, it's much more along the lines of Guardians of the Galaxy than, for example, Civil War or the Avengers movies. It's not quite as serious. It takes more of that campy humor sort of approach that Guardians of the Galaxy does. So if you like Guardians of the Galaxy, you're probably going to like Thor Ragnarok. It even takes a little bit of those aesthetics where it's the kind of, I don't want to say retro per se, but there is sort of a retro vibe to it in the way that the movie is put together, the sort of bright pastel colors. It kind of feels like something from the 70s, something like that. So I think in a lot of ways it is really trying to, and I think that this was done intentionally because of how successful Guardians is. They really tried to take the mold from Guardians of the Galaxy and place it onto Thor. And I think it actually works really well. I was kind of skeptical of that when I first saw it. I saw some of the marketing and some of the trailers. But I think that it actually works, which I was a little bit surprised about. There are some serious moments. Of course, it's an action movie. You're going to see some fight scenes. There are a few moments where it's kind of somber, but they're very short-lived. You don't see a lot of that, honestly. And even with the really somber moments, they're usually broken up with a joke very quickly. So, for example, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but there's a very serious moment at the end of the movie, which I was expecting it to be a little bit serious, to be kind of straightforward and kind of somber, and they immediately break the tension with a joke, which I don't know that I necessarily minded it, but it was something that I was aware of, that they can't even really have a very serious moment in this movie because it's constantly hitting you with jokes, which, again, if you like that, if you like the humor aspect of it, you're probably going to really love this movie. I really love this movie. And I really like Guardians, so I don't think that that comes as a surprise to anybody. One thing that I will say about it is if you're a fan of the Marvel franchise, if you watch a lot of the Marvel movies, it is very different from the previous Thor movies because of that, because of the tone, because of the setting. And so, you know, with the Thor movies in the past, you're used to it being this big buildup, this catastrophic event, which I guess technically is still taking place, but it doesn't feel as serious because there's a constant, you know, jokes and you're getting the humor on and off. There's humor in the other Thor movies too, obviously, but it's not as constant. They turn it on and off. So you'll see some moments of the movie that are really funny, and then they'll kind of just cut back to the action. They don't really do that as much in this movie. It's kind of interlaced all throughout the movie. So it feels a lot different from the previous Thor movies. And part of that is also because of the setting. Because, again, I'm not going to give away many spoilers, but very, very little time is spent on Earth. Thor's not really on Earth very much, which that's kind of true to the comics in a sense. I mean, he will be on Earth about half the time in the comics, but he's also off in space or somewhere else in the other nine realms for the rest of the comic book. So one thing that it is, I think, important to be aware of is that you're not going to have a movie similar to the previous two Thor movies. And so if you're expecting it to be kind of like Thor or Thor the Dark World, you're probably going to be kind of surprised that it's not like that. You don't have really many even references to characters from the original two movies. The only characters that are in all three are Odin, Loki, and Thor. And maybe some minor characters like Heimdall. But my point is pretty much all the main characters, especially the ones from Earth, they're not present in this movie at all. So if you're looking for something that is a spiritual sequel to that, you're probably not going to be real happy about it. I personally really like the first two Thor movies, and I like this one despite them being very different. I can enjoy both. If you like the more serious Marvel movies and don't care for the campy ones, so if you're a big, for example, Captain America fan, you like the somberness of those movies, you like the kind of tragic tone that takes place in The Incredible Hulk, you're probably just not going to be as much of a fan of this one because it relies so heavily on the humor. But I really liked it. I really thought that it was a move in the right direction. And I think it might actually be the best of the three Thor movies. In fact, I would go out on a limb to say, and maybe a little bit of time would change my opinion on this, I think it's actually the best of the three Thor movies. One thing that is kind of ironic, though, and again, I'm not trying to give away any spoilers, so I'm going to be cautious in how I say this. The plot, if you really break it down, is not much different at all from the plot of the first Thor movie. I mean, obviously the names and situations have changed and he's not going to Earth. But really, if you break it all down, the plots are very similar. And if you've seen the first Thor movie and you go to see this movie, you'll see what I mean. But really fun summer movie. It's kind of the last hoorah for the summer movie series season. Really, actually, you could probably say that the summer movie season has already passed, and this one just came in a little late. But nonetheless, it feels like a summer movie. It feels like just a, you know, go in with your Coke and popcorn. It's not a serious film. You're not going to be on the edge of your seat much, honestly. But it's really fun, really good to watch. My biggest criticism, and I don't think I'm giving away any spoilers because of the way that they handled it, I was actually very upset that they showed Thor in the trailers. Or sorry, not Thor. Obviously, they had to show Thor in the trailers. I was very upset that they showed Hulk in the trailers. Because Hulk's in this movie, he's a big part of it, he's one of the main characters, and it really bothers me that they didn't let that organically take place in the movie, because in that scene that they show in all the trailers that have come out, where they have that reveal where Hulk jumps out and he's a gladiator and he's going to be fighting Thor, that scene I feel like would have been absolutely amazing, probably the best scene in the entire film had it not been for me already knowing about it. And so all that suspense and all the excitement that would have taken place in revealing that Hulk is going to be in this movie was kind of taken away. And it was a big surprise because it wasn't something that happened early on. It happens like about maybe not quite halfway through, but a solid like 30, 40 minutes into this movie is when they show Hulk. And I feel like that would have been a really, really great moment in the theater had I not already known about it. I understand why they did it, because they know that the Thor franchise isn't their most popular and they wanted to get people out to see it. So you throw Hulk in there so more people will go see the movie. Look, I get that. I understand from a marketing perspective and a money-making perspective why you want to do that. But as a storyteller, I really wish they had just let that play out organically on the screen with people in the theaters, because that would have been a really great moment. But final verdict, if you really like the serious Marvel films more, if you're a big fan of the Captain America, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hulk, the first two Thor movies, you might be upset that this one is so campy and relies so heavily on humor, but I like both. I like the serious movies. Captain America, Winter Soldier is probably my favorite Marvel movie so far, and I still really, really liked this movie. So I highly recommend it. Lots of fun. Go see it with the kids. Go see it with the wife. It's only been out for a week now, so still fresh. You'll still be plenty of matinees and showings of it this weekend to go see. So I highly recommend it. Something fun to do this weekend if you happen to have a little spare time between watching your football games, whatever it may be. So go out and see that. Chaplin's Report is up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, but the Chaplain's Report is on right now. So, in this particular passage, we see the Apostle Paul addressing the church at Rome. And he's talking to them about the law, the requirements of the law, talking about the old law and the traditions, and he says something that I do think is profound. This is from Romans chapter 2, 1 through 4. Therefore you have no excuse, every one of you who passes judgment, for in that which you judge another, you condemn yourself. For you who judge practice the same things. And we know that the judgment of God rightly falls upon those who practice such things. But do you suppose this, O man, when you pass judgment on those who practice such things and you do the same yourself, that you will escape the judgment of God? Or do you think lightly of the riches of his kindness and tolerance and patience, not knowing that the kindness of God leads you to repentance? Now, a lot of people will mistakenly look at passages like this and say, well, this means that we shouldn't judge. They do the same thing with the passage from the Sermon on the Mount that Christ uses in Matthew 7, 1 and 2. What they'll say is, it says, well, judge not lest you be judged. okay, well, that means we're not allowed to judge. Christians shouldn't be judging people. But what they don't do is they don't read the very next verse, which says, with the same measure that you judge, so shall you be judged. So with the same measure that you judge. In other words, Christ is assuming that we're going to judge people. That was a warning, if you take it in context, to not judge people too harshly. To keep in mind that when you judge others, that you have been given a lot of leeway by God as well. And so this is not saying Christians can never judge. What it is saying is be cautious when you judge, and be cautious the way that you live your life, especially considering that you will be judging others. It assumes that we're going to judge. In fact, we're commanded to judge righteously. But when we do so, we're supposed to take into consideration God's word and use that as our standard, not our own personal vendettas. Many times, I think the reason that this is such a profound message to us is because we tend to detest the most the qualities in other people that we have in ourselves. For example, very little gets under my skin, but one thing that honestly can get me a little perturbed is somebody that's arrogant and prideful. Why? Because I'm arrogant. And I think because it's a vice that I personally struggle with, it's something that reminds me of how obnoxious it is to run into somebody that is prideful. And so that being one of my big problems and one of the things that I struggle with spiritually, I think that's the reason that I dislike it so much in other people, is because it reminds me of myself. And we as humans tend to do this a lot. You'll notice that somebody who is petty is bothered by pettiness. I've run into this quite a few times. Somebody that says that they're the one that hates it when people drum up a bunch of drama, they're the one drumming up all the drama. And I think they're being sincere in that. I don't think that they're trying to be hypocritical or anything like that. I think what's going on, though, is we as human beings naturally detest that in others what we have ourselves the most. And I think that that's a natural thing. So what God is saying here, and what Paul is trying to warn us about, is he's saying, keep in mind that you do some of the same things that you're getting upset at other people about. I think that is a sobering reminder that we're imperfect and that God has done an awful lot for us. And so it would behoove us to do the best that we can to remember that God has been merciful and gracious to us in a lot of ways, and that that will help us, as Paul is suggesting, to be gracious and merciful to other people when the time comes for us to extend those things. You see, the bottom line in this whole thing is just Paul is saying, stay away from sin, stay away from doing things you shouldn't be doing yourself, and be merciful in your judgment. And there is a profound difference in mercy and excusing. Excusing is essentially saying, no, it's okay. So if somebody does something and you say, no, that's all right. If someone accidentally bumps into you and you know that it's an accident, you can excuse somebody, say, no, that's fine. I know that you didn't mean to do it. That's essentially saying you didn't do anything wrong, ergo, I'm going to excuse it. Mercy is not that. Mercy is you did do something wrong. I'm aware of that. I know that it was wrong. I know that it was intentional. I'm going to forgive you anyway, because it's the right thing to do and because I have been forgiven of many things that I did that was intentional and was wrong. And so it's important that we do not confuse these two things. Excusing someone and saying that it's all right is different from actually forgiving someone. That is acknowledging that they have done something incorrectly, something that they should not have done, and in spite of that knowledge, going ahead and forgiving them anyway. Remember that we also sin, and we have desire for mercy. In a lot of ways, this is kind of like applying the golden rule to ourselves. That because we want mercy and we want to be forgiven for things that we've done, we have merciful hearts ourselves, and we follow Christ's example by forgiving others. We have been given a lot, and our treatment of others should reflect that. We've been given a lot of leeway, and so when we treat other people that way, that should come off from us that we have been given a lot of mercy as well. Because if a perfect, all-powerful God can show sinners mercy, surely we can show mercy, kindness, and love to one another. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.